Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of the NAACP, Injustices and Justices to Black People. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. To elaborate on the subject, my guest is Benjamin Hooks, Executive Director of the NAACP. My other panelist is Nancy Anderson, who's a writer for Broadside at George Mason. Tell me, Mr. Hooks, exactly what is the NAACP and its role? And I'm curious what direction the NAACP is currently focusing on.
Well, I suppose that it's a very easy answer, and maybe sort of evasive to say that we are still dealing with the same issues we dealt with in 1909. We're dealing with the unequal society, the dual society. We have succeeded in eliminating some of that. We have by law eliminated segregation in schools and discrimination and segregation in housing by law, not in fact, not in actual practice. And so we're involved in the second dimension of the whole struggle, and that is to make those laws and statutes and rules of the court become reality. The fact of the matter is that America has never shown a very tolerant attitude in the race question except for very brief periods of time. The last time really being right after the death of John Kennedy and the first two or three years of the new Johnson administration. Since then, we've been in a sort of regressive mood from that time down to now. And it just makes the job of the NAACP that much more difficult, but it doesn't really change the goals that we seek to attain.
There has been the controversy whether or not there's the need still for an NAACP. How do you feel about that?
I really don't discuss it. Anybody dumb enough to ask it, let them answer it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at a nation where you got 10% of the population, only 2% of the blacks, doctors, 2% lawyers, 50% of all the people in prisons are black, less than 4% of the correctional personnel, 7,000 radio stations, less than 100 owned by blacks, 700 commercial television stations, only 3 owned by blacks, 16,000 members of boards of directors of the top 1,000 companies, only 93 black directors, not a single black senator. If anybody wants to ask, is NAACP needed, you know, let them go speak to the wind, because I don't fool with it.
Are black people retrogressing?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. I mean, you have to go into too many aspects. 25 million black people with $100 billion gross national product, a million youngsters in post-secondary education, 4,000 to 5,000 elected black officials. It depends on whether you want to say, is the glass half full or half empty? We've come a long way. I'm 55 years old, and it's very difficult for me to say retrogression, because I remember what real young people can ask, because they've never known what it was to suffer. And I didn't know what slavery was as such. So I think we're making progress, but it's almost like kind of progress you'd make if you were walking up on an escalator that was going down. It makes it very difficult.
Many people refer to the 60s as being the movement time. Do you feel as though the 80s are also going to be movement time?
Well, I think that every age brings about its own type of action and reaction. I think we make a great mistake if we think that we dictate events. Events sometimes dictate what happens. At the end of World War II, there was some feeling that a lot of white service people had seen new styles of life in Europe and Asia. They had faced black and white together common enemies, and there were new problems, and there was some feeling that we'd make some progress. Unfortunately, that seemed to have been a false feeling. Dr. King, capitalizing on the Montgomery bus boycott, believed that there was a conscience to be met. The NAACP had been involved in so many long-range fights that started paying off in the mid-50s. So the times and the events came together and produced certain men and women who were able to sort of lead us through those events. It was not staged. It did not happen by design. It sort of fortuitously all came together. I don't predict what the 80s will bring. I simply don't know. I think that we'll produce the kind of leadership, the kind of action that's necessary to deal with the problems. I don't know what they're going to be as yet.
You've talked about leadership. So many people have said there are no leaders in the black community now since Dr. King's death. Is that a myth?
Well, that's a downright lie. And it always tickles me, because half the people say that didn't follow Dr. King. I was on the board of directors of Dr. King's organization for almost 15 or 16 years. And the same blacks who say there are no black leaders didn't support Dr. King, not with money, not with ideas. They stood around the street corner saying, I can't be nonviolent. I have to fight back. And I knew they were lying when they were still living. So, you know, the mythology and the fabulizing and the building of people. Dr. King was a generally great leader, but he never had the amount of people follow him in the black community, and certainly not in the white community, in his life as he did in his death. Everybody followed him the minute he died. We're a nation that specializes in killing live heroes and worshiping dead heroes. When John Kennedy went to Dallas on that fateful day in November, the Dallas papers almost ate him alive. And the next day when he died, they eulogized him. You thought they were among his greatest supporters. That doesn't surprise me. A lot of things people ask, I just laugh at them. They're not really worth a serious comment, except that if I'm asked, I have to respond.
What do you say are the crucial aspects of the community right now, the crucial problems, the things that we must deal with ourselves?
Well, first of all, we have to always remember that we're part of this country. Of course, there are a lot of lunatics out here that say we're not, but the fact is we are, and we don't believe we are. Let a war break out, we'll die in it, and when depressions come, we suffer in it. And the biggest problem facing America today, in my judgment, is economic. The continuing double-digit inflation, and along with a looming recession that's onerous, in fact, not just looming, and the increase in unemployment. So that if you were to do a questionnaire of anybody in this country, be they black or white, I think 90% would agree this is the major problem. Now, black people don't control the Senate. In fact, we don't have a black person in the Senate. We don't control the House. We don't have 20 over there. We're not Secretary of Treasury. We're not the chairperson of the Federal Reserve Board. We're not the Office of Management and Budget. But we have a stake, and I think we have to be heard, the most pressing problem facing this country. And one of the reasons why I'm willing to wish President Ronald Reagan good luck in trying to solve the economic problems. And the NAACP stands prepared to do that, to work with him, so long as he does not cut across our long-established goals and traditions. For instance, we will not support him if he attempts to cut the minimum wage. We will not support him if he abandons the concept of busing as a means of quality integrated education. We will not support him on any attempt to roll back public education by a so-called voucher plan. We will not support the concept of turning welfare programs over to the state. But in the broad sweep, if he can control inflation and bring about the creation of jobs, it will help blacks as well as whites. And since blacks are a minority, we'll be treated far worse than the rest of the population if this tremendously bad economic climate continues.
There have been many predictions this week about Mr. Reagan's cutbacks in the economy. Do you have any exact views on the ones brought up right now?
I think they're playing a very funny game. They have people leaking things, and I don't get caught up in that. They want a lot of violent reaction, so they'll know where they're going. So let them bring that rabbit out. I have my own. I'll wait until the 18th, and this Thursday, and the 18th of February, see what Mr. Reagan has to say.
Some time back, there was a lot of Klan activity on different campuses throughout the nation. Has there been a rising of that recently?
It's very difficult to say. In our last board meeting, we established what we call a Klan watch because we want to know what the Klan is doing. You can't rely on newspapers, radio, and television anymore for a really decent news. They're liable to take one Klansman and make him into a million. Take a million NAACPers and make them into one. Take a Barker case as a victory and make it a defeat. Called affirmative action, reverse discrimination. The amount of misinformation that we get daily through our newspapers and radios is almost alarming. It's appalling, creating a monumental mass of ignorance out here in the world. So I don't know what the Klan is doing based on news media reports, because it's so easy for them to go after the dramatic, and you might think that every other person is actually put on a night sheet. I don't know. In our 1,800 branches, our network of branches, we're attempting to find out what the Klan is really all about. When we get some real hard information, we don't expect anybody to use it, but we'll have it. But I'm not going to be stampeded. It's no question that Klan activity is rising, and that's dangerous, and I'm very frightened by it, fearful of it, alarmed by it. But to the real extent of it, I really don't know.
Any ideas about the creating of the national holiday for Dr. Martin Luther King?
NAACP supports it wholeheartedly. Unfortunately, the climate doesn't seem to be too good for it at this point.
I've got a question about the new moral majority that you see on the rise. Do you feel that's a threat to the black population?
Well, the moral majority is more of a threat to itself than anybody else, so they don't have sense enough to know they're undermining the whole fiber of American life. You can't legislate morality. Some of those people who raise sand, drink whiskey, and run after women, and do every other thing. And more than that, they are hateful people, prejudiced people, who don't really respect womanhood or ethnic differences. So their real threat is, if they had their way, they would destroy the very thing that gives them the freedom to act like that, and they would become prisoners. So I'm really afraid of them because of their ignorance and misguided objectives.
It has been said that black people are a divided nation with no country.
Well, I don't know what that means. We Americans, this is our country. I was born here. I mean, what other nation do I have? Why should I have to claim something else? My grandmother was born here. My great-grandmother was born here. I'm not going to let folk run me out of America. We picked the cotton, planted the corn. Now, whose country is it? We fought the battles. This is my country. And I'm not worried about it. I've been to Africa, and I love Africa, but it's not my country. Never was there, except on a visit. I don't plan to go back there. If any white people have any illusion I'm leaving, they may as well disabuse themselves. I'll be here.
Any comments to our black students, our black youth?
Well, my first word would be a word of optimism, to remind them they're struggling with far less difficult problems than did their foreparents. And I get so tired of whining, complaining, bellyaching. Stalked with a young man last night, said, "We don't have a right to a job. We don't have a right to a house." I said, "Boy, I'm glad you didn't come along in the 1850s, because black folk would have been destroyed utterly if you were sitting here crying now at all you have." I think we've got to have the ability to understand that in spite of all the hell we're catching, we have opportunities to change it. We have better opportunities than we've ever had. It isn't any question about the fact that things are trying to be turned backward. But my destiny is not in the hands of former President Carter or present President Reagan. And I refuse to make anybody make me bow and stoop so low that I think some one white man is going to determine where I end up. If he had that much power, it'd be God. I don't believe in that. And I just get mad at people running around saying, "What is Reagan going to do to us? What are we going to do to ourselves?" He's only elected for 4 years. I don't guess we're ready for a dictator. Job said about some folk, once the Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. So the folk gave Reagan the victory, we didn't, but we'll be around 4 years from now. We'll be here 2 years from now when all the House of Representatives are up for re-election. So I just think that this business of gloom and doom and prophesying and wringing hands can really go too far. I think we ought to get up and do the best we can with what we have while we're fighting for what we're supposed to get. I don't mean the defeatist attitude that accepts segregation or accepts bigotry. I mean we ought to fight it. But I think the man who tries to impose bigotry is no worse than the fellow who sits there and takes it, and all he can do is just big mouth and bellyache and moan and groan. Black folk have a glorious and a wonderful history of resisting all kinds of problems and overcoming them. Come from nothing to something, from nowhere to where we are today. And I wonder about our students who are sitting with a hot dog in one hand, a can of beer in the other, and living in a steam-heated dormitory and said, "Man, we ain't got a chance." To me, it's ludicrous. I guess I'm thankful to God that I came through some very hard days, and I'm just as intolerant of bigotry and the segregated practice and racism as they are. The difference is that so many young people seem to have given up, and as for me, I'm I'm just beginning the fight. They have allowed themselves to be brainwashed in a sense of defeatism, apathy, and in an attempt to resist, they don't know how to resist. So if white folks say study, we won't study. They say, save money, we don't save money. We're trying to fight, and that's a good thing. We're trying to resist the system that is running us crazy. Dr. King used to say that it's a wonder all black folk weren't in an insane asylum, living in such a racist society. It's a tribute to something deeply held within us that we've been able to retain our sanity. I don't have any long range to spare for young people. I think they'll come to their senses, and not all of them are off the mark now. But to the students of this great institution, I simply point out that you've got to be prepared to work hard to achieve your dream.
Unfortunately, our time is up. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.